These are the Genisodes, my very own podcast where good things are good and bad things are less good.
Jen, now and then.
If you a bad type chick, mama, my cosign. People see you in the club and be like, oh yes, sir. They make it gyrate, just like an earthquake. Do your thing, girl, let me see you shake and bake. If you a bad type chick, mama, my cosign.
Welcome to the Genisodes. This is Jen, and we have a very special guest. It's international superstar Cam Banks. Hello!
Hello!
You are now the brand manager for Atlas Games.
I am.
Yes. But you still work with Margaret Weiss Productions.
I do. You just can't leave the good stuff.
Of course not. So, this is like our yearly talk. You were on the show in the very, very beginning. I think it was like episode 6 or something.
Wow.
Yeah, you were like one of my first interviews.
That's pretty cool. I did not know that.
Yeah. It's a long time ago.
There have been so many. You're like an episode 1006 now.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yes.
Just quick count of how many it's been, and it's been like, you know, 3 a day for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's good to be back.
Yay. So let's kick this off. You know, there was the news where you just started like the other day at Atlas Games, but yet you're still working with Margaret Weiss Productions. So what are you still doing there, and how did you go about changing what you're doing, like jobs and stuff?
Yep.
Because you get to do this all day, every day,
it's
working
true.
With games.
I mean, to the outside observer, it's not a whole lot different, because the things that I work on were the things that I was working on before. And to some degree, there will be differences because you won't see me posting as much about certain things like day-to-day business and that kind of stuff. You know, you might see more of Christy Cardenas posting on the website updates, which is fine because she knows a lot more about the contract side of things anyway. Mm-hmm. But for the purposes of game design and development, I'm still the line developer for Marvel and for Leverage and other game lines like that. But we've been getting some great help from people who we've kind of built up over the past year through Marvel and similar game lines as being people we trust to run things and head up projects. So, for example, the Kickstarter we just have, Dave Chalker and Phil Maynard are both sort of running that show with me kind of as just, you know, hanging on, kind of poking my nose in with once in a while, because they know how the Kickstarter side of things works much better than I do. So going forward, I think you'll see a lot more of people who you may have seen in the credits pages of the books doing a little bit more than just writing or being assistant developer or whatever, which is cool because it really means that there's a lot of talent we've had that we can now draw on in a better way.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome that more people are getting into the industry and it's, you know, it's broadening out.
Yes. I think the one danger of anything like this is that you get people who are just insular. You know, you don't want anyone else new. You don't like to recruit new talent. And that certainly hasn't been a problem for us. We've got some folks who work with us quite often in the past. I mean, Amanda Valentine, for example. But she's also very important to Evil Hat. Mm-hmm. And she's done work for Crafty Games, too, and for other companies. So that's not like a big surprise having someone like Amanda work on our books. But there are others who, like Dave is a good example. He wasn't doing a whole lot with us until Marvel. And then he helped me as the assistant developer for the Annihilation event books, which are only just now going to be coming out. Mm-hmm. Just shows you how long these things take to do.
Yeah, I know. Marvel came out, well, I guess it was 2 Gen Cons ago when it got announced.
Yeah.
And then you guys fast forwarded it. And last year at this time, we were talking about, you know, Marvel coming out. And so in the past year, it's all this stuff's been happening. So what's been going on with Marvel and what's still left to come?
Yeah, so the last year we got a bunch of awards. We got awards at the Ennies, which was great. We won a few other awards too in recognition, things that people were saying, reviews that were really hot. And that really helped us a ton better about the work we did, you know, because it's always difficult with licenses. whether you've and whether the people who play it are liking it. We're very confident with playtesting. We thought everyone loves this game, or if we didn't like it, they would change it. We'd change it for them and say, "How's this? Is it better?" So at the end, we thought, "Okay, great. The game is as tested as we can get it. Let's put it out there." And then there's that moment of like, "Well, is it actually going to be any good or not?" And turns out, lots of people like it. So that's really cool. And then after that, we put out the Civil War event book, which was a really huge hardcover. And that came in two versions. One actually had the rules in it as well, so you could buy that just by itself. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've had some supplements and things as well. The next of the big events is the Annihilation one I mentioned that Dave was working on with me and a whole lot of other cool people who helped write that. That should be coming out, I think, end of this month, finally. Finally. It takes forever. The licensing is a big deal, and the printing can cost a lot, and you have to kind of juggle things around. And if it doesn't work out, you have to delay things. The PDFs can come out, but then people who pre-order it and say, "Well, I've got the PDF, where's my book?" And we just feel kind of embarrassed because we really want everyone to have the books they want.
Mm-hmm. So what's the next stuff that's going to come out after?
Okay, so Annihilation is the big cosmic stuff. You're going to have Silver Surfer and Galactus and Nova and the Guardians of the Galaxy and all those guys, which are kind of hot right now at Marvel as far as movies, because they're going to put a Guardians of the Galaxy movie out. And the Avengers movie at the end, you have Thanos sort of as a surprise villain just turning his head and looking at the audience. So it's obvious that Marvel wants to do something more with space stuff, and I think our timing on that was pretty good. So that's neat. And then after that, just more things. We're trying to get stuff finished and completed and out the door and approved. And if we can, even more stuff throughout this year and next year.
Okay, so through 2013 and hopefully 2014 is what you're looking at?
Crossing our fingers, yes.
Because it all goes with licensing and getting the approvals of everything.
Yeah, it is a delicate process, but we have some really amazing people we work with at Marvel. My favorite guy there, Brian Overton, is in the publishing department, and he is just so fantastic, because if you have to have a person to contact with who you deal with on a day-to-day basis or maybe week-to-week, it's nice having someone who understands gaming, and he really does. He gets it, and he understands what stuff we're doing, and I think he appreciates the level of knowledge that the writers and my team have, so that he doesn't have to try and explain, you know, "You can't do that. Dr. Doom is not painted green. He's actually wearing a green costume," and so on. I actually get the impression sometimes he has to deal with people who just have no idea about comic books but want to have Iron Man all over their stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're kind of a change from that.
That's good. So how does the whole process work? Do you guys just pitch ideas, or are you guys writing the whole thing and then they're like, "Nope, not at all"? Sorry.
Up till now, what's happened is and it's been working out okay. We kind of have a broad idea of what books we want to put out, but we don't have to send them an outline or anything. We just clear the titles and maybe the subject matter with them and sort of discuss the kinds of books we want to publish. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to have this book, and we want to have three supplements for this book. We want to have this online PDF thing, and then we want to have two other things that come out. I think we've done a good job enough right now that we can probably start talking about, you know, different ways to shuffle the schedule around and so on. But before that, when you haven't done much with a licensor, you have to try and show them that you understand their property. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, people feel a whole lot better about dealing with you.
Yeah, that's really cool that you get to keep working on it, and hopefully it keeps going for the next couple of years. Because I know a lot of people are really excited about it. And it's always cool to get a new supplement or a new expansion, you know, cool, that you don't have to use with the core game, but you can, you know, and you can pick and choose which one you like.
Nice. Yeah, no, it really is good. I think in some cases there are people who are licensing out their property who have specific things they really want you to do. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't always work with the role-playing game market either. You know, sometimes they would maybe want you, as an example, just do the story in this TV show or this movie or this comic book. Don't go outside of that. And if you do, you know, it'll take 6 months for us to review it. And in that case, you just have no freedom to do anything you want. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, it's you know, you sort of have to reconsider whether you want to do that license or if you have to try and approach it from a different angle. Mm-hmm. I think we're lucky with Marvel because Marvel's such a huge universe. There's such a lot of characters and many stories that have been popular that you can always convince them of the worth of a story by saying, well, this one sold really well for you. We'd like to do a thing based on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of how it's worked out well for us too, is knowing the properties well enough to be able to talk to them as if we understood them, as opposed to, you know, BSing them about how we don't know anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's doing really well.
Yay! Cool.
So you had mentioned before the Cortex Plex Kickstarter. So how did you guys go about doing that, and why are you doing it?
This thing actually was around before Marvel even came out.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it was an idea that came up that I thought I would love to try and get these hacks that people have put together. There are a lot of people who are hacking Smallville and Leverage, and I noticed this, and I was in discussion with some people who had said, you know, what can we do with this? And I said, well, you can't publish it because it's not a license that you can do. It isn't like the D20 open game license or anything. But wouldn't it be cool if we maybe had an open call for people to submit hacks and just, you know, like say 2,000 to 5,000 words or longer. And then we get them all together and we edit them and then we put them into a single book and sell that. And that worked out well. We got a lot of people, about 20-something people. But then it hit this brick wall of, you know, there was never enough resources to keep going on it. There was always something else I had to divert my attention to. And then Marvel happened.
Mm-hmm.
And now that Marvel's sort of kind of moving ahead on its own speed and doing a good job of what it's doing, and we've got people like Dave and Phil who are able to come up and sort of say, well, we wouldn't mind helping you out with this. Then you get to the point, well, how do we finish it? How do we keep this from being vaporware? And we hadn't done any Kickstarters before, but we thought this is a great way to test out Kickstarter and see if we could do it in a way that was popular to fans and really gave them what they wanted. And so far, it's been great. I mean, at the time of recording, I think we've got 3 days to go, and we've already made all of our stretch goals, I think, except for the last one. And we may actually have made that already, and who knows, when this gets, you know, broadcast, we may have cleared that too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really thrilled. We did a lot of stuff on that, and people have been amazingly supportive of it.
Yeah. So what are some of those stretch goals that you were going for?
Well, initially we didn't even have any art that we had planned for the Hacker's Guide. We were going to maybe use some public domain stuff and some basic graphic stuff. But when our first stretch goal was to get, you know, to have enough money to really commission some art for each chapter. You know, and we meet that. We got that one. We thought, great, this is fantastic. Well, first of all, we were like, yeah, we actually funded the thing. We got past the first, you know, limit. And then that stretch goal happened. And then we moved on to, I think it was, maybe it was the Fantasy Heroic Roleplaying was next, I think. And there's a two parts to that. There was the, we'll do the basic version and then the amazing expert version. And the Fantasy Heroic Roleplaying is Marvel, but taken to a fantasy setting, sort of like D&D meets the Marvel system.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave Chalker had been playing with this. He'd run it at PAX East last year for me and a few other people. And it was cool. I was like, this with this game, I could play a warhorse bard called Brad who wore barding. And he was like, yeah, you could, or you could play an elf fighter. I'm like, yeah, that's nice, but I want to do something different. And the way the system works is you can kind of play anything. I mean, it's really fun. So that's kind of a neat twist on the fantasy side of things for us. We haven't had a real fantasy game at Margaret Weiss Productions really. Mm-hmm. So far. Not since Dragonlance, at least, anyway. So that one, the first goal, we passed that first goal, so now we're going to have that. And then we passed the next one, and we're just tonight, I'm looking at seeing whether we've passed the next stretch goal, which is to get the Smallville system, which is the dramatic role playing or Cortex plus drama. We're going to release that as a generic kind of IP free version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that people can play that game without having to worry about the Smallville stuff, which people were doing anyway. But, you know, for some people, it's kind of a turn off to have to look at Tom Welling, you know. I don't know. strangely enough. But yeah, so that's a really big deal too, because people have been wanting to have that generic version of Cortex Plus before, and you just couldn't do it until now.
So with all these stretch goals, I mean, it's a lot of work adding things on. And I know from other people, they've had issues, you know, like they're like, oh, great, you know, we made our goal, our initial, we can make the book. We're going to add all this cool stuff on and cool and keep adding and adding and adding and adding. And then they forget that it takes time to do all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, we were lucky. We already had all the content done. I mean, the book was written already. And so really the Kickstarter was aimed at, can we finish, polish it up and make it into a proper book? And then can we get that published and printed? And then can we add more stuff to it? I think the extra stuff may take a little longer, you know, and if we keep going beyond, and maybe the next goal after that might be something else we make more generic. And that would add also onto the sort of the size of the book. But I think people are really, really keen to see the different hacks. We post the list of the table of contents. And because we'd already had it already, we didn't have to overpromise. Like we didn't promise the book to anybody, because we didn't say, yeah, I'm going to make this thing and it's going to have web apps and an iPhone sort of thing, and it's going to have this ARG component that you can go out into the streets and find things. I have seen Kickstarters before that really went crazy with that stuff. And then they succeed and they fund, and then they're the people who have to kind of do it.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether that's the part that people fall down on, is that they realize they can't afford, even with the money they raise for it, to do it. So you have to be very careful and cautious with it.
Yeah, Kickstarter is a tricky thing. Not even just to make your goal, but those stretch goals are tough. You know, you don't want to overpromise, and you want to make sure you get the stuff out to everybody.
Yeah, but people also want to see what else you have.
Yeah.
And you do kind of get a good sense of how much interest there is out there. You know, like you're looking at the Fate Core one. I mean, clearly there's, you know, what, 10,000 people out there who really like Fate Core. So if you've got that kind of size of a fan base, you must feel pretty confident about yourself. That's kind of an eye opener. I don't even think people realize just how much people like certain things until they look at the results of Kickstarters.
Yeah. And hopefully with all that money, they can go and hire a couple more people if they need it. It's, you know, when you're a one person, you know, entity, it's really hard. You want to give the best that you can, and, you know, other time takes over.
Because you did that, and you had to wrestle with a lot of this stuff, right?
Yeah, I had done it so that my goal was so high, though. That was just to cover the book, because I was doing so much with the book. Yeah. Like with the art and the printing and everything, and I wanted it the best that it could be. So I didn't really hit any stretch goals. We had a couple little stretch goals, but that came in like the last couple days. It was for, like, you know, putting some extra art in there, and then I forget, a little something else. I forget.
A deluxe leather-bound edition?
Yeah, no. I was like, no, that's not going to happen.
You want t-shirts and you want to have, like, other stuff.
Yeah. Bad.
No, we didn't do that stuff either. We have no swag, really. That's something that you do in backer levels too, right? Where you promise, hey, if you give us $100, we'll give you all kinds of stuff. Yeah. And then you have to try and come up with all the stuff.
Yeah, that's what I've been sorting now. Sorting and, like, putting into baggies and checking things off lists and getting things ready to start the whole process.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad I don't have to do that stuff. So, yeah, but successful Kickstarter. I'm really happy with it. And maybe if this is an indicator of how things go, we could do more of them in the future.
Yeah. Awesome. So, let us talk now about what your new job is. You've had 2 days, as of this recording, at Atlas Games.
Exactly. Day one, move furniture around to make office and install Adobe Creative Suite onto a new MacBook. That's day one.
That took you all day?
It did. Oh my gosh. You would not believe it.
Did you get to meet people in the office and stuff?
Yes. John Nephew, who was one of my bosses, works there, and my wife Jessica Banks works there as the executive assistant. And my title is brand manager, which covers all kinds of things. But the things that I'm probably going to be focusing on most is role-playing games, which haven't had a lot of focus at Atlas. Mm-hmm. There's a huge Ars Magica fan base, and those books come out like 4 times a year. So it's a constant, ongoing, awesome project. But they don't get a lot of airplay. No one just sort of rants about Ars Magica on you know, Google Plus all the time, which is a shame because the game is really cool. And they have a lot of role playing games which used to be on other companies too, like Feng Shui and Unknown Armies and other games. Mm-hmm. And Over the Edge. These are games which may have been around for a long time and don't get much spoken about now. I mean, Over the Edge is currently in its 20th anniversary year. And that's one of the games that really was formative to me. I mean, it's one of my top five influential games. And so I think that's kind of the thing. We're going through this phase now, I think, in the gaming industry where we're looking back at what has happened before and we're kind of resurrecting things. You see this a lot with D&D. You know, D&D Next is very much all about looking to the past and seeing what worked. And other companies are starting to do the same thing. I think there is a Kickstarter for Tunnels and Trolls right now, too. You know, and Traveller's coming back, and this game, and that game, and other games. So, for me, this kind of job is wonderful because I get to work with some cool people, a lot of talent that I think are very top-notch in games that I've loved for years, and I'm looking to see what else we can do with them.
So how was your second day?
So day two was installing Thunderbird email and then suddenly getting all the email that had been stacking up waiting for me to answer it, which seems funny too because it's like, well, whatever, email. But this was email filled with things like, here are some instructions for this and here's what I think you should do next and here's a big long list of things and you have to read this and this and this. And it was great. I mean, it was wonderful to sort of dive right in there, but also I was kind of astonished at just how long it took to get through that. So that was day two. Day three will be a whole lot less of moving around of furniture and setting up of things. I think I'm going to be working on some artwork and InDesign stuff, I think, tomorrow.
Cool. So you're getting right into the crux of everything.
Totally.
Nice. So you'll be doing that as like your everyday job and then still working with Marvel with everything else, too.
Yeah, and we've got Leverage, which is still having these little $2.99 weekly digital companions that are coming out. So that's something else we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Solis has been working on those. So yeah, nighttime and weekends, I've got projects at MWP that I can work on. And then 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, is Atlas.
So how do you think that's going to be a change for you? I mean, going from one to the other.
Yeah, I mean, technically I had that same set of hours with Margaret Weiss Productions before. But I think the change is more about the culture of the company that I'm now working with. It's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been around longer, and it has got different properties, and there are different people. There's a lot of overlap, I think, in some ways, but there are other ways that are completely different, and that's kind of neat and different, too. Mm-hmm.
So when you go to conventions now, who are you going to be with?
Well, if I go to a convention, it's going to be with Atlas Games or with the people at Adventure Retail, the Exact Change booth. They do the Exact Change dance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that different from, like, for the past couple of years when I go to Origins, I also go there with Adventure Retail and I rep for Margaret Weiss Productions because they have some of the MWP games in stock.
Mm-hmm.
There's no actual MWP booth. And so instead of going with them, you know, I go along with Adventure Retail. So I've known those guys for a while. And in St. Paul, the game store called The Source, comic book and game store, is quite popular and famous here. Sort of a local legend. And that's the same company as Adventure Retail. And they're cousins of Atlas Games, too. They all sort of belong to one big happy family.
Nice.
Yes.
Super cool. So are you excited for any big projects at Atlas Games or just the, you know, you're still getting your feet wet and excited to work on the various titles that they have?
I'm excited to try and see what new projects we can come up with. I think I've been given a little bit of a mandate to look ahead and see what things we can do that's new and different. But I'm also excited to sort of just get into the day-to-day business of managing some of the stuff that we already have.
Mm-hmm.
The company's done so well in the past year with Gloom because you saw that on tabletop with
Wall Street.
And that is one of the biggest sellers, and Atlas has done really well with that. You know, and kind of thinking, what else can we do? How else can we sort of build on this new audience that we've got and show them what else we can do.
Nice. Cool. So is there anything else you want to add about Marvel or Atlas Games or anything else that you're doing? Do you have some secret project that you've hidden away somewhere?
Well, this year I made a couple of New Year's resolutions because I've got this indie freelance sort of vibe that I can now pursue. I'm allowed to do stuff on the side with Atlas. You know, I can take on my own gigs if I want to. I was playing a game of King of Tokyo with my 6-year-old son Griffin, and he and I were trying to figure out the rules. And it's a fun game. It's kind of like Monster Yahtzee. Have you played that yet? King of Tokyo?
No.
Okay, so it's like one person, one monster is in Tokyo whenever the monster has to fight him. And if you push him out of Tokyo, another monster goes in the middle and they fight him. But it's like you roll these 6 dice and they have different symbols on them. And so it's kind of like Yahtzee, you're trying to get a straight or a 3 of a kind or something. And it was fun and a pretty cool game, and a lot of people have liked it. But it didn't feel like big kaiju monster battles to me. And my son was like, this isn't really like Godzilla. So my plan is to make a monster fighting game that my 6-year-old will love and my 10-year-old can play and the other kids can play. And that's my mission this year, is to try and write that.
Cool.
I don't know if it'll be an RPG. It might be better as a kind of a tabletop board game fighting game. I got to figure it out.
Yeah. That's the fun part about designing. Figure it out as you go. Cool.
So and then I have another thing I want to try and do. I want to see if I can write some more this year. But at this point, I'm looking at my spare time and wondering where it's. Who knows?
You're gonna need a couple more hours in the day. You're not allowed to sleep.
No, I can't sleep anymore.
Cool. Awesome. Well, let's tie up your topic there and jump into Cam's Corner. Yay! Where you get to talk about something cool and awesome you normally don't get to talk about.
Well, what am I going to talk about in Cam's Corner that isn't like everything else that I do in my day? what was I going to say? Oh, this is weird, and I'm not actually a tricky person, really. I like Star Trek to some degree, but I'm not like an obsessive fan. But I found on Netflix, I was flicking through, and they just put up the Star Trek Nemesis movie, which is a really kind of not that great. One of the last, I think it's the last one that the Next Generation crew were on.
But I was
kind of intrigued by some of the story, and I love the remake Star Trek movie, which had Chris Pine and stuff as Kirk. So I started going back over and watching episodes of, like, I don't know, Voyager and Deep Space Nine and things that I hadn't watched before, or I forgot all about because I wasn't really paying attention. And there's a lot of really awesome writing in there. I think that it gets lost on people who aren't obsessive fans, because you don't just watch every episode one by one in a row, because when it comes on TV, it's just on TV. And so I had this project. I thought, I want to go through and watch the last story arc of each show. So I watch the last one of Next Generation, and then watch the last one of Deep Space Nine, and the last one of Voyager. I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool. This is a weird way to do it, because you don't even bother with the whole series. You just watch the last bit. How does it finish, you know? And they always do like the CSI trick. They'll have guest stars from the other show to introduce you to the new show. So if you're a really big fan of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, you want to watch the crossover episode where they introduce some characters from the show that's just about to start. And that way they can kind of get you into the new show. And this is a thing that's, I guess, common across all of TV. If you're going to have a spinoff, you have to have someone on the spinoff be on your main show first, or vice versa, so that you'll drag all the audience over. And the way they do it is really, really ham-fisted and terrible. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. I guess if I had, you know, everyone's gone to bed and I have nothing else to do, I put some Star Trek on and watch like 2 episodes, and just, I'm just, it's like a, coming from it having had no experience at all is really odd. So I recommend finding a TV show that you didn't watch on Netflix or renting it from wherever and just doing that and seeing what happens, especially if it's one that everyone loved back in the day and you never bothered to watch it. It's the coolest thing ever. So
so you excited about the new Star Trek movie that's coming out?
Yeah, it's like...
Did you see the trailer during the Super Bowl?
I am a huge fan of Benedict Cumberbatch because of his Sherlock. Mm-hmm. And he's really cool. And I guess he's the voice of Smaug in the new Hobbit movies.
Yeah.
So, and my wife thinks he's fantastic. Super dreamy British. Embarrassing. But no, he's really good. And I don't quite know what they're going to do with it. But it looks as if everything blows up. That's my guess. Everything blows up and Kirk has to stop everything from blowing up.
It looks pretty awesome. First, during the Super Bowl, I saw the Fast and Furious 6. And I was like, wow, I want to go see that. And then like 10 minutes later, not even. No, so I tweeted that. I was like, who wants to go see Fast and Furious 6 with me? And I was like, Brant, look, look, look. People are saying they want to go with the movies with me. And it was like 10, you know, like about like 6 people answered in like 5 minutes. And then I see the commercial for the new Star Trek. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, scratch that. Do you want to see Fast and Furious 6? I was going to see Star Trek. It was going to see it with me. And within like 10 seconds, like everybody was like, bee, bee, bee.
And then they give you the Iron Man thing. And it's like 10 seconds of Iron Man. And
you're
then
like, you're like, but does he save them? Do you not?
Go to the website or Facebook and you'll see the long version. I'm like, oh, what?
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. Oh. I'll just wait.
Who does Facebook anyway?
I'm lazy.
Now I want to go back and watch 5 movies worth of Fast and Furious to see what the heck it's all about.
Because they bring back every person. Every person from those movies.
I haven't seen any of them. Have you seen them?
1 and 2.
And did you see Tokyo Drift?
3. I don't think I saw Tokyo Drift. That's what I'm missing. So bad. It's like going back and watching all the Step It Up movies.
That's also bad.
Don't make me do it.
But I think that this is what this is about. This is going back and watching these things when you kind of don't feel as ashamed about it anymore.
I don't know about that.
Well, okay. Some stuff you just can't escape the shame.
But then you have the new Die Hard coming out. Die Hard 6.
No, it's not Die Hard 6.
6.
It can't be 5. 6. 5. 6?
Yeah.
Die Hard, then Die Harder, then the Live Free or Die Hard. No, it's the other one. It's number 5.
We're going to look this up. Wait.
I'm pretty sure.
Die Hard. Because this is important. Because we always watch all the Die Hards.
Was there a Die Hardest?
It's Die Hard. Die Hard with a Vengeance. Live Free or Die Hard. A Good Day to Die Hard. That's 2013. Die Hard 2. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
5, right?
5.
See?
Die Hard 5.
You can make Die Hard 6 in your mind. You can cast it. I think you have to have Bruce Willis. I would bring back, I know this is not a popular choice, I would bring back the guy, the kid from the 4th one, who was the hacker kid, who was also the Apple.
Oh, that guy.
The Mac. I'm the Mac. But I would bring him in, and I would also add John Hodgman, because he's perfect in anything. So Die Hard 6 has John Hodgman, Bruce Willis, and dude whose name I can't remember. I don't even remember what his name is. Jake something. See, that's my plan.
Okay. We should make a Die Hard the game RPG.
I bet you could fate that. I bet you could. I bet there's ways that you could convince people to make a fate version of Die Hard. But there was a game called Extreme Vengeance, which was supposed to be the blowing up super movie blockbuster game, and that was kind of cool, so you could go with that too.
Oh, that's true. Good point. Look up
Extreme Vengeance.
Okay, awesome. Well, I think that ties up your topic there, because we've talked enough about movies. I should go on to the last little section called the rate it section.
Excellent.
Which is very easy.
It is.
So all you have to do is listen to order from best to least best the following 5 words: puppies, pandas, tacos, gaming, and dice.
Okay, pandas is going first this time because, you know. And then I would say dice, and then gaming, and then tacos and puppies.
Excellent.
Yay. Perfect.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on my show again.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you for having me back on this year.